Good morning. And welcome to GE's 2014 annual meeting. I'm Jeff Immelt, Chairman of the Board of GE, and here with me today are Jeff Bornstein, our Chief Financial Officer, and Brackett Dennison, our General Counsel. Each year we hold our annual meeting in a GE town that epitomizes what our company is about and that our shareowners deserve to see. This year it's Chicago, and we're very proud to be here. Chicago is one of America's great cities, and the state of Illinois is an important center of business for GE. We have nearly 1,700 employees working in the Chicago area. Chicago is the global headquarters of our transportation business and headquarters for about a third of GE Capital, and really every GE business has presence in this city. Across the state, we have more than 4,400 employees and an additional 1,000 GE retirees. GE has stayed competitive for more than a century, and I see that same spirit in Chicago. Chicago is known as the city that works, and like GE, Chicago is always making progress. Chicago saw advanced manufacturing as the wave of the future. That vision led this town to being selected as the site of the U.S. Digital Manufacturing and Design Innovation Institute. The institute will work on faster and cheaper production of the next generation products like fuel-efficient aircraft engines and locomotives. We agree with Chicago that advanced manufacturing will change business, and that's why we invest in millions alongside the city to be a partner to the institute. Combining GE's knowledge of the industrial internet with advanced manufacturing skills of the institute will change U.S. manufacturing and bring high-tech jobs will add to the city's economy. Last year, we also tapped into the passion for innovation across the Chicagoland area by hosting Minds and Machine Forum here. This was a global customer forum to celebrate the development of brilliant machines using data and analytics to improve industrial efficiency. GE puts our innovation to work with our customers, some of whom are here in Chicago. We partnered with Boeing for generations to make the most fuel-efficient aircraft in the world, like the Boeing Dreamliner, the 737 MAX, and the 777X. We're working on innovative analytical solutions to save cost and improve efficiency at United Continental. We partnered with Commonwealth Edison on smart meters and grid modernization. And we've collaborated with major hospitals like Northwestern and Alliance to improve healthcare cost, quality, and access. Grainger has been a lighting partner for decades. And Invenergy is an entrepreneurial power developer that has partnered with GE to expand renewable energy. For generations, we've delivered outcomes for some of Chicago's best companies. This week, we also made a $2.2 million grant to combat Chicago's leading cause of death, cardiovascular disease. This grant will fund a partnership between Chicago Department of Public Health, Northwestern University, and four local community organizations to screen 30,000 residents for CVD by 2015. The purpose is to empower Chicago's community health workers with the skills needed to make the healthiest city in the world. So this is a great place for GE and its shareowners to be, and I welcome all of you. We like to think that GE is a competitive and customer-focused company, and we're focused on the big productivity drivers of our time. Unconventional resources and the shale gas revolution, advanced manufacturing, combining the power of analytics with material sciences to optimize product performance through what we call the industrial internet, achieving global scale with local relevance, and competing with the lean and simple structure. With more than $100 billion in revenue and 16% margins, we're one of the largest and most profitable infrastructure companies in the world, selling in more than 170 countries. And we're an important financial services player with an emphasis on specialty finance for small and medium-sized businesses. In this regard, GE links thousands of our GE Capital customers to the best practices of our industrial businesses in a program we call Access GE. We help them get better because we're builders, not bankers. The culture of our company is based on progress. Progress is about getting better, being better, doing better. And that's why GE people get up every day. We're mission-based. GE technology and people move, power, build, and cure the world. And we're constantly searching for a better way. We expect ourselves to get better every day and to make progress and move with speed. We live in a slow growth and volatile economy, but we have a strong set of core beliefs that guide us. At GE, we believe that we must deliver results in a risky world, that integrity and accountability are linked. We believe that customers determine our future, their voice is the ultimate truth, that we should stay lean to go fast because scarcity encourages teamwork. We believe that the ability to adapt is more important than perfection, and we're open to learning and relentless improvement. We're focused on growing and inspiring ambitious teams, teams that play to win and want to create the future. And that's what allowed us to grow and be successful for over 130 years, and really that's what keeps us humble as we look at the future. This is who we are, it's why GE works, and it's why you can be proud of your company, and why your company is positioned for success. And now to our order of business. I'm advised that this meeting is properly convened, that we have a quorum, and that the proposed resolutions presented in the proxy statement are filed as part of these proceedings. We've received proxies representing over 75% of the approximately 10 billion outstanding shares eligible to vote. The Management Proxy Committee has voted these shares in accordance with shareholder wishes. It's now my privilege to introduce the director nominees and members of your board of directors who are here with us today, and I'm going to ask the directors to stand briefly as I introduce them so you can see who they are. Sandy Warner, former chairman of the board, J.P. Morgan Chase, the director since 1992. Sandy is chairman of the Audit Committee. Dr. Jim Cash, emeritus professor of business administration, Harvard Business School, a director since 1997. Andrea Jung, president, chief executive officer, Grameen America, former chairman of Avon, a director since 1998. Ann Fudge, former chairman and chief executive officer, Young and Rubicam, a director since 1999. Shelley Lazarus, chairman emeritus of Ogilvy and Mather, a director since 2000. Shelley is chair of the Governance and Public Affairs Committee. Dr. Bob Swearinger, professor of accounting and former dean, Johnson Graduate School of Management, Cornell University, a director since 2002. Bob Lane, former chairman and chief executive officer, Deere, a director since 2005. Dr. Susan Hockfield, president emerita and professor of neuroscience, MIT, a director since 2006. Susan is chair of the Science Technology Committee. Jim Mobile, former chairman and chief executive officer, ConocoPhillips, a director since 2008. Jeff Beatty, former chief executive officer of the Woodbridge Company, a director since 2009. Jeff is chairman of the Risk Committee. Jim Tisch, president, chief executive officer, Lowe's Corporation, a director since 2010. Ryan Decker is chairman of the Management Board, Bayer, a director since 2012. Jack Brennan, chairman emeritus and senior advisor of the Vanguard Group, a director since 2012. Frank D'Souza, chief executive officer, Cognizant Technology Solutions, a director since 2013. Mary Shapiro, vice chair of the advisory board, Promontory Financial Group, and chairman and former chairman, Securities and Exchange Commission, a director since 2013. And Jim Moore, executive chair and former chief executive officer, PNC Financial Services Group, a director since 2013. I would like to acknowledge one director who's not standing for re-election. Ralph Larson has been a GE director for 12 years, most of which he served as lead director. We always remember his wisdom and judgment across every business and his dedicated service to investors. Ralph is a great man. So please help me acknowledge Ralph's work on behalf of GE. And I'm pleased to announce that Jack Brennan will be GE's next lead director and in that capacity, chair of the Management Development and Compensation Committee. We look forward to Jack's guidance as we build a more valuable GE. Congratulations, Jack. I'd also like to ask Dan Heintzman, John Rice, and Keith Sharon to stand briefly. They're vice chairman of GE. Thanks. And now to agenda item number two, report on GE operations. And to help me do that is our CFO, Jeff Bornstein. And we'll go through kind of an update on the company and where we stand. Jeff?
Thank you, and good morning. I'm going to go through a little bit on the operations of the company for 2013, give you a sense of where we think we're going in 2014. First, I'll start a little bit with the environment. So as most of you probably know, the U.S. economy continues to strengthen, maybe not as robustly as we prefer, but we've got solid growth and it's steady, and we think that bodes well for the company and the products and services we sell in the United States. Europe is not growing as robustly, with likely less than a point of GDP growth, but it's stable and steady and much stronger in the north, a little weaker in the south of Europe. And then emerging markets for us are mixed, but continue to be a source of strength for GE and our global footprint. In many markets like sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, China, Southeast Asia, we're growing double digits, and we expect to continue to grow double digits in those markets in 2014. All of this, particularly in the U.S., has been supported by supportive monetary policy in both Europe and the United States has enjoyed a low level of inflation over this period of time. We are faced with some geopolitical instability, and that will continue to create volatility in the world and for our company at some level as we move forward. But we really like how our businesses are positioned based on these global macro dynamics. So a little bit on how we finished 2013. We grew earnings per share by 9%. We continued to grow our backlog. This is both services and equipment. We grew at 16% in 2013 versus 2012. And the company continues to be in great shape from a capital and cash liquidity perspective. We ended the year with $89 billion of consolidated cash, $14 billion at the parent company and $75 billion in GE Capital. And because of all that strength, we were able to increase the dividend in 2013 by 16% to 22 cents a share a quarter, beginning in the first quarter of this year in 14. From an initiatives perspective, the company continues to globalize. It continues to be a huge source of strength for us. Almost 58% of what we sold in 2013 was outside the United States, and that's basically a complete flip from where we were a decade ago. Services continues to be a big focus. It's our most profitable venture. It's 43% of revenue. We're very, very focused on continuing to build out our service franchise, and we still remain committed to delivering and investing in technology and NPI going forward, investing 5% of revenue back into our products and our businesses organically. And then for us, the simplification effort that we've talked about is continues to pay dividends. We have a lot of momentum. We were able to increase our margins last year 60 basis points from 2012, 66 basis points excluding the impact of acquisitions. So lots of good momentum and strength in the margin line. Just briefly on capital allocation, you can see here on the left, from the period of 2010 through 13, we paid $26 billion of dividends to shareholders. We bought back $19 billion of shares. A lot of that enabled by the disposition of NBC in 2013. And we've done $23 billion in M&A to strengthen our franchises and build out both our product and geographic footprint. Not on the chart, we've disposed of $24 billion of portfolio businesses in the same period of time that is more or less funded dollar for dollar that M&A growth. We still remain squarely focused on the dividend as our number one priority. The stock today has got something approaching a 3.3% yield, which we think is quite attractive. We'll continue to reduce the share count over time. We've set a target by the end of 2015 to be about 9.5 billion shares. We'll continue to focus on acquisitions in the core of what we do and where we add real value. And we'll continue to invest organically in the company as we move forward. Most importantly, around all of that planning around capital allocation, we'll ensure the company is safe and secure when making smart long-term decisions for the company. Just a little bit in terms of how we see the earning dynamics for 2014. On the left side, you've got the industrial businesses. We expect segment profit in 2014 to grow double digits from $16.2 billion in 2013, and we expect to continue to enhance margins and grow margins in 2014 from the 15.7% that we achieved in 2013. We've got a great backlog that enables a lot of visibility into how we achieve this. It all gives us, also gives us an enormous opportunity to drive productivity against that backlog. On the right is GE Capital. GE Capital has done a phenomenal job since the crisis, refocusing itself, shrinking to its core and what it does best and where it has the most competitive advantage. We expect GE Capital to have another solid year in 2014 and earn something like $7 billion. And as we've announced publicly, we plan to start in the initial stage of spinning off our credit card business in the U.S. with hoping to split it off to shareholders in 2015. And that value will accrue back to the company in the form of reducing outstanding GE shares. Just on the first quarter results, we just announced results. I think we started the year quite strongly. We delivered $34 billion of revenue, 33 cents a share in EPS. That was up 9% year over year, adjusting for not having NBC year over year, so we feel quite good about that. Industrial organic revenue grew 8%. Operating earnings grew 12% in the industrial complex. We were able to increase margins 50 basis points in the quarter year over year. And GE Capital had a very solid quarter with $1.9 billion of earnings. We also delivered $1.7 billion of cash flow in the quarter as compared to $200 million the year previous, so much stronger this year. And we returned $3.4 billion back to shareholders in the form of $2.2 billion of dividends and $1.2 billion of stock buyback in the first quarter. So performance drives returns. There's no question about that. We expect from $1.64 in 13 to grow our earnings per share in 2014. And if you look at where the company's delivered on performance-wise from a total shareholder return since 2010, GE's total shareholder returns over 100% as it compared to the S&P 500 at 85%. And in 2013, we outperformed the S&P 500 by 600 basis points. Off to a little bit of a slow start this year, but we're quite confident if we deliver the plan for the year, the stock will also perform in 2014. So with that, I'll turn it back to Jeff.
Thanks. Not just maybe a longer-term look at how the company's positioned and some of the things we're driving.
We've talked frequently to our investors about the desire to get to a 70% infrastructure, 30% financial services split. We're well on our way to accomplishing that. And the big enterprise initiatives that we drive across the company are really technology, a focus on globalization and growth markets, services driving strong customer outcomes, and really a culture around speed and simplification, low cost. And as we do that, we're delivering good organic growth and margins, and we'll have a lot of capital to reallocate to our investors. We position the company to really participate in some of the big drivers of this era. There's a ton of money being invested in infrastructure. We can capitalize on that. We're really well positioned in 170 countries around the world. We play in energy efficiency, distributed healthcare. We've made big investments in analytics. They're going to help the framework of our products and how they perform. We're investing in advanced manufacturing and want to lead there. So really the company has positioned itself to get some tailwind in some of the big themes of the 21st century where we think GE can participate and win. Technology is a big reason why people invest in the company. On a three-year basis, we really invest almost $17 billion as we look out, about 5% of our revenue. And we have a strong commitment to global research and fundamental research. We execute on big, complex systems like jet engines and subsea oil and gas products, and things that are hard for people to do. We have a real foundation in science inside the company, and we link with our customers. So investing in technology is a big reason that we have competitive advantage and are able to participate in some of these high-tech industries. This is just an example of that technical investment that we've made in the aviation industry. We'll launch a new jet engine virtually every year this decade, and they have tremendous fuel advantage to our big customers like Boeing or United Airlines here in town. We've got a huge backlog of these products. We have $125 billion backlog of engines and services, so tremendous competitive position and a huge installed base. Just in the time that I've been CEO, the installed base has grown from 13,000 units to 46,000 units, and that continues to pay back to investors for decades, so a real strength. And we build on exclusive G technology, so our commitment to make lightweight, high-temperature materials really gives us a strong competitive advantage when we look at our aviation business. Services, Jeff talked about, we sell big capital products, and then those have to operate in our customer setting for a long time. We have about $45 billion of services at GE and at the relatively high margin with a big backlog. And we really are on the same side as the customer, so as we make the assets perform better, our customers do better as well. And we make big investments here in both the physical products but also the analytical pieces around the product. So we can add the domain expertise in industries like locomotives and repair technology, but add to that the real advantages we have in terms of how the assets operate and are more successful for our customers. So this is a big competitive advantage that the company has. Oil and gas is a big in-use industry for us. We are about $20 billion in the oil and gas industry. Our customers in the oil and gas industry have about a $90 billion opportunity for productivity every year. The average cost to our customers of a downtime of a unit in a day is somewhere between $500,000 and $10 million a day. So we offer solutions to them that allow our equipment to be more available and more reliable to help their operations and production. And so our service vision really with our customers is to have no unplanned downtime and asset optimization, and we think that's a successful formula as well. We're a very global company, as Jeff said. In 2013, we had $46 billion of orders just in emerging markets. These are places that, a lot of us hadn't found years ago and decades ago, but your company is really able to compete and participate in 170 countries around the world. Since 2010, our growth rate has been 17% in these countries, so we're able to be a big exporter because of that. We're able to participate in the growth regions around the world. So when you invest in GE, you're really investing in a great American company and one that can win in every corner of the world. So we want you to be proud of that, to know we do business the right way and we do business successfully and competitively as we travel on a global basis. Jeff talked about the need to drive margins and cost structure, so we're on our way to 17% margins by 2016. This will put us in the top probably 10 or 20% of all industrial companies in the world. So this is quite a healthy target for us to have. And one of the ways that we get there is by taking structural costs out of the company, lean headquarters, smaller headquarters, big information strength, simplified profit and loss centers. So we're driving our margins up by improving productivity and efficiency and speed, and we continue to work on structure so that we can deliver good, healthy margins to our investors that generates cash and wealth as time goes on. Two big drivers we think of that. One is a commitment to manufacturing. You know, GE has been a big leader globally and in this country in manufacturing, and we've innovated a lot in that regard. So we made big investments in additive manufacturing, probably one of the leading practitioners, if not the leading practitioner in the world, in additive manufacturing. We worked with rapid prototyping, and so we work with a lot of outside suppliers on ways to drive speed and best ideas into the system. We've invested in advanced robotics to make us more efficient, and we're constantly inventing new materials that make our products lighter weight and higher heat, and we think this is a big competitive advantage as well. So when you read in the newspaper about manufacturing, I want you to know that your company is leading the way. And a process tool that we call FastWorks inside the company to really help drive speed. This is something that we've really adopted out of Silicon Valley that increases speed to market and improves our chance to success and really helps drive our competitiveness, and we're driving this across GE today. One example is the time to market of our largest gas turbine called the H turbine, 61% efficient, about 400 megawatts or more of output, and we're getting this to market in half the time it would have traditionally taken, and how we respond to our aviation customers and commercial operations in terms of driving speed and solutions to them as well. And so when you add all that up in terms of where the company is, I think 70-30 industrial financial is valuable, sustainable organic growth in the high single digits, simpler ways to run the company, more efficient ways to run the company, expanding margins, cash to invest in dividends back to investors, stock buyback, reducing our share count, and expanding returns over time. This is really the GE story that was written about in your annual report and one that we're proud to share with you this morning. So thanks for your attention. And now we're going to go on to the areas of discussion and other matters set forth in the proxy statement. And we're going to begin with the agenda item 3, presentation of voting matters. The independent inspectors of election for this year's meeting are representatives of IBS Associates. The inspectors have taken the oath of office required by law and have been at work since the proxy started coming in. If you've already voted by proxy, there's no need to vote by ballot today unless you would like to change your vote, and you will find a ballot on your seat. We'll take up the election of directors and the management and shareholder proposals. After the election of directors and management proposals are introduced, there will be an opportunity for discussion. And after the shareholder proposals are introduced, there will be a chance to discuss those as well. There will be time later on in the meeting for discussion of other business matters, but first we need to address the items that are presented in the proxy. So the first matter is the election of directors. I place before the meeting to serve as directors for the coming year the 17 individuals whose names and biographies appear on pages 2 through 7 of the proxy statement. Each of these nominees has received the overwhelming majority of the 8 billion shares voted by proxy. The next on the agenda is the proposal to approve our named executives' compensation. Your board of directors recommends a vote for the approval of our named executives' compensation. And the third thing is we'll move on to the proposal to ratify the selection of KPMG as independent auditors for 2014. We have with us today John Viemeyer and Bill O'Mara of KPMG. They're responsible for the GE audit, and they're available after the meeting to respond to your appropriate questions. Your board of directors recommends a vote for the ratification of KPMG as independent auditors for 2014. So if you have any questions or comments on those three, go to the mics, and I'll call on you, if not, and give your name. Is there any discussion on the board nominees or any of the management proposals? Yes, sir. Number 2.
Right. Thanks. My name is Martin Blatzer, Chicago. I'm representing the Steiner of New York City. On the election of directors, shareholders like to believe that they elect directors who direct. So this request is directed to directors. At the beginning of the meeting, you talked about Chicago, but you forgot to say we're the Windy City. And the subject is wind. On the west side of Chicago, we have a devastated area. And I believe the windmill department of GE should explore the possibility of creating a windmill farm in the west side of Chicago, which will bring many benefits for the city of Chicago. Also, I recommend that the same inquiry be done in Detroit, where they have vast areas, also the city of Cleveland. Hopefully, we'll see some action so we could have create jobs in Chicago, Detroit, and Cleveland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll move on to the shareholder proposals and the order in which they appear in the agenda. To be sure that all the proponents have an opportunity to present their proposals today, we ask that the presenters confine their comments during this portion of the meeting to the subject matter of the proposal being presented. And we ask that other speakers wait until all shareholder proposals are presented before providing their comments. We'll have an opportunity for discussion of other matters after we finish the balloting report of inspectors of election on the voting results. So the first proposal is on cumulative votes, and I believe that Mr. Hengozo is here today to present proposal number one. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Martin Hengozo. I am grateful to be a shareholder. I love this company, people, and products. Should this year's percentage dividend increase continue until I reach the age of my current living relative, I will earn per annum $35 million. At today's multiple, I will be a GE stock billionaire. Excited by this, I have produced a T-shirt that says, GE to make me a billionaire with a B. Cumulative voting is recommended by Warren Buffett's mentor, Benjamin Graham, in a book security analysis he co-authored with David Dodd. Holocaust survivor Evelyn Davis placed this proposal on the GE proxy many times in previous years. I am honored to stand on the shoulders of great people in presenting this cumulative voting proposal. Cumulative voting gives shareholders a company with more distinction capability in directing elections. Director provides oversight to the company on behalf of the shareholders. Oversight matters of interest to me are sustainability and transparency. I do not believe there is any legal behavior that is an overreaction to the dividend adjustment. I'm equally confident that there is no argument against the relationship that financial strength improves when you decrease debt. I enjoyed the annual report where you mentioned Jeff Bezos' assertion that most businesses soon fail. If, for example, GE became free from debt and indexed a quarter of net income, we can thank Bezos for pumping profits into our company and remind him if Amazon fails, a better successor is likely to follow. If we allotted 1% of debt or $3.3 billion of net income to reduce our debt, we will be debt-free in the next 100 years. I believe this is a strategic starting point. I was formerly an employee of the Bethlehem Steel Corporation. My colleagues lost their pensions when the company realized the concerns of Bezos. As a purchasing agent, I supported just-in-time factories when suppliers became insolvent. Experience taught me to be cautious when suppliers had debt in excess of half of sales or five times earnings. Our debt, $330 billion according to Value Line, is more than twice sales, twice shareholder equity, and 26 times earnings. It is almost $1,000 for each American. Indexed today at a market PE of 18, our debt would produce $18 billion of income, or $5 billion more than the $13 billion we are getting. Regarding transparency, I struggle with how it happens that so many accomplished directors and gifted managers adjusted the dividend. Roger Penske, for example, is a billionaire. Do his checks bounce or does his mortgage default? Of course not. The answer that comes to me is a memory of a meeting you held at Monogram Hall Appliance Park. You behaved as though you had a normal work day and took questions from the audience. GE has nothing to hide. I listened to the questions and answers and raised my hand. The event was staged. When you pay people to tell you what you want to hear and ask what you want to answer, you remove the oversight needed to see opportunities, avoid pitfalls, and honor the dividend. For the quarterly earnings updates, like a bank statement, I would prefer sales, net income, and debt numbers before any written text. $146 billion, $13 billion, $330 billion represent the sales, net earnings, and debt respectively, down 1%, down 0.5%, and down 1% from a year ago as an example. I wish share concentration would stay fixed as net income improves. Net income is down this year as well as last year. I hope this turns around, but did not see this plan in the annual report. While sustainability and transparency are oversight matters of interest to me, I know there are other matters of interest to other shareholders. I urge all shareholders to vote for cumulative voting shareholder proposal number one.
Great, thank you, Mr. Aragosa. I understand that Timothy Roberts will be presenting proposals 2, 3, 5. Okay.
I have the right to speak on the proposal. Is the microphone on?
There.
Without question, I believe I'm the only one in this room that has used cumulative voting to be elected a director and has cumulative voting used against me. I'm the president of the Cincinnati Union Stockyard Company since 1965. I used cumulative voting to get on the board of the Stockyard Company, and eventually I became the president. In the 1966 annual meeting, the minority shareholders elected a director through cumulative voting to be on the board. I lived with that minority director for over 10 years until we closed up the stockyards. I'm the only one in this room who's had the experience both ways. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I understand that Timothy Roberts will be presenting proposals 2, 3, 5, and 6. So number 2 is hold options, shares for life. Number 3 is multiple board candidates. Number 5 is to cease options and bonuses. And number 6 is to entertain a study to sell GE. So is Mr. Roberts here today? Thank you. Good morning. No, you'll come next, Mr. Klosker. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. My name is Tim Roberts. The objective of this presentation is to give shareholders a company aligned to stock gains experienced by management. Wall Street Journal writer Jason Swy, in the company in the book The Intelligent Investor, revised edition, page 511, no CEO deserves to make himself rich if he has produced poor results for you. The proposal highlights that from October the 17th, 2000, in 13 years, Mr. Immelt has gained through options and stock trades 2,250% growth, all while the shareholder during the same time experienced a decline of 60%. The market is at near record highs, yet our stocks, our dividends, and our earnings are trailing like a caboose. When the company underperforms the market, bonuses are paid. This is accomplished by taking the company nearly bankrupt, according to Forbes, then claiming a slight recovery as an outperformance to the market. Trading patterns show that both Mr. Welch and Mr. Immelt made enormous amounts of money on options and trading GE stock. Collectively, they earned hundreds of millions doing that. Welch and Immelt become rich utilizing the shareholders as useful idiots. Their inside trading, even if legal, is outperforming the buy and hold shareholders handsomely. There currently is no mechanism that will prevent this from becoming a common occurrence. Shareholders do not have the same inside control, and we lose money. Welch said to Financial Times effectively that much of GE valuation was unsustainably driven by debt. Welch did not, however, return to the GE shareholders the hundreds of millions he collected in creating that GE bubble. Welch and Immelt kept their money as shareholders lost their shirts. Immelt and Welch created wealth similar to that of Bernard Madoff, in that the temporary claimed earnings growth were not sustainable. Yet unlike Madoff, the money Welch and Immelt earned fleecing the shareholders remained in their pockets. Given the size of the valuation declines and dividend declines, and Welch's acknowledgement that debt-driven profits are not sustainable, salary increases should only occur when profits increase, with debt simultaneously decreasing. Increasing the profits by increasing debt continues the insanity. as Welch discussed in Financial Times. General Electric's response to this proposal focuses on shares Mr. Elmer primarily acquired after he became CEO. This fails to highlight that Elmer sold millions of dollars of GE stock when the price was at the top, only to buy after Elmer became CEO and the stock fell. I noticed for decades that the GE proxy printed the addresses of the shareholder proponents. This was missing this year. I wonder why. As my home address was on last year's proxy, I received correspondence from several shareholders. All were positive. One wrote that he lost both his shirt and his underwear. So, shareholders, I urge you to make proxy recommendations and ask me if you need any help in doing so. My email is timclayroberts@yahoo.com. The proposal. The board of directors are requested to consider voting that unvested stock options are held for the life of the executive. If you look at the data on this proposal, Mr. Emmons, you see that $100 managed by your trades becomes $2,350. Yet we see $100 invested in GE falls to $60. So this raises questions collectively for you, Mr. Emmons. Would you rather have $60 or $2,350? Would GE catch up to the market beginning your tenure? And why did you leave the addresses off of the shareholder proposals? And next year, will you put those addresses back on with each proposal? And finally, can you chart your performance to the market since your tenure in the front of the annual report? To prevent performance swings that enrich executives but impoverish shareholders, please vote yes for holding options for life. Shareholder proposal number 2. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Jensen requested me to present his proposal. General Electric, a $100 billion-plus net asset company, 12 digits growing to an historical market average, will gain an additional 7 digits in 200 years, making 19 digits. A one-time 1% donation, 17 digits, would give each person today much more than $1 million. 2 centuries of intelligent monetary growth can forever change the world financially, permanently eliminating millenniums of persistent poverty and illiteracy. No more biblical poor Lazarus, as Lazarus becomes a millionaire. The $1,000 shareholder becomes a decade billionaire. The pensioners hold. We can give the public this much. Today, we use more steel and build larger ships than ever. Yet one-time largest shipbuilder, Bethlehem Steel, led by charming CEOs, guided by rigorously selected cozy directors with impressive credentials, went bankrupt as Warren Buffett did not bail them out. Bethlehem Steel did not see its underperformance to the market as an opportunity to harness the market until it could once again lead the market. It simply went bust. Millenniums of commerce and centuries of equity growth teach us that debt-free indexing should enable General Electric to perpetually grow, exceeding 3 digits each century. All of history shows that any plan short of this likely will not achieve such growth. Something always goes wrong. Somebody will borrow too much. Financial saviors, as Warren Buffett, are rare. A U.S. housing crisis occurs when 99.2% of average Americans make good on their 30-year mortgages. Our board, likely all multimillionaires, did not protect a dividend 6 months after promising to do so. Dividend cuts and shared appreciation hurt the poor and an elderly widow much more than a wealthy director. If the oak does not grow to the sky, growth can be earned in the saplings. The dividend debacle should be met with the words, never again. Debt-free companies paying half of earnings in dividends will not default on dividends. We can lend to many nations, but borrow from none. This year, for example, we earned $13 billion in net income. We paid $8 billion in dividends, leaving $5 billion of retained earnings. But then we repurchased shares for $10 billion. If you only have $5 billion, how do you buy shares worth $10 billion? Clearly, we're using debt to buy stock, a risky scenario given that debt is real and stock prices can be a freak show. The leverage troubles did not steer us away from using debt again to attempt to inflate the stock price. Alice Schroeder writes regarding Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, "The board members may as well be Barbie dolls. Even Warren Buffett has criticized his ineffectiveness as a board member. The leadership transition process resembles those of dictatorships, more so than typical elections, as there is no election choice. Presidential elections, on the other hand, teach spirited competition. This creates the world's greatest economies. Single-candidate director elections should be improved. My dear fellow shareholders, I bring a plan with a date to add 7 digits to the company's performance while reducing risk. If you like such a plan, you should vote for those directors that present a plan meeting such investment objectives in our report. This is recommended by Warren Buffett's mentor, late Benjamin Grossbaum, in securities analysis. This requires a choice in director elections. Please vote for shareholder candidate elections, proposal number 3. Thank you." Mr. Gilson requested me to present his proposal. The objective of this presentation is to give shareholders a company more incentivized towards price stability. For perspective, if, for example, one attributed a $5 million wrongful death award to the near 3,000 victims of 9/11, this total would be about $15 billion. The GE valuation decline, as the price went from $60 to $6, was over $500 billion, more than 30 times as much. I would like to establish what happened and how to fix this. Books have been written that Jack Welch grew valuation by $450 billion, yet valuation fell by $500 billion from the company's peak due to gross lack of sustainability. So one must ask, what good is a skyscraper that falls in less than 10 years? Ex-CEO Jack Welch and shareholder Jack Welch mentioned getting a gun and shooting the CEO. I believe there's a smarter way, though. It is important to recognize that not all companies made a so-called banking error. The market is up 59% from year-end 2001, yet we are down 37% from year 2001. There is no doubt that financial leverage drove GE volatility. What is lacking is a clear written numerical standard that defines safety and warrants a risk. In other words, a financial speed limit. I will recommend a standard. Given that asset allocations by management is effectively investing shareholders' money, I find it prudent to follow the counsel of, and according to most experts, the greatest investment thinker of all time, Benjamin Grossbaum. Indeed, he mentored Warren Buffett, who in turn bailed us out. So let's listen to him. For financial stability, he recommends at a minimum that current assets are twice current liabilities and that current assets exceed long-term debt. GE fails on both counts, according to CNBC, but passes according to Value Line. The annual report does not give assets and current liabilities as separate line items. I think it should. Last year's proxy featured the benefits of debt-free companies. This clearly meets the so-called 2-to-1 current ratio and has no long-term debt. So we have a red, yellow, and green scenario. Once we transition to a two to one current ratio and current assets exceed long-term debt, we transition from red to yellow. Once we eliminate long-term and short-term debt, we are green. It's that simple and straightforward. Further recommendations for price stability include generous dividends as they dampen the volatility of the stock's price. This is in preference to share repurchases. Indeed, to me, the promise to protect the 2009 dividend was much louder than any promise to concentrate shares. Please make shareholders hold to the 2009 dividend before buying back shares, if that is what you promised. It is recommended to target and grow net income, a standard that has declined for the past 2 years, instead of pro forma income. Net income was on the first page of the annual report when it was growing and the stock price was $60. Now net income is shown on page 70. The current practice of stock options and bonuses encourage share price volatility, enriching executives while causing shareholders to lose their shirts. Please vote for eliminating stock options and bonuses, shareholder proposal number 5. Thank you. Robert Frederick has requested me to represent him in presenting his shareholder proposal to sell the company. The spirit and letter recommends raising your voice, and here they give me a microphone. Mr. Immelt, when you were advised that you would become CEO of GE November the 24th, 2000, the stock price was about $50. Today, it's about $26, a little more than half the price when you were named. The S&P 500, however, grew about 40%. So since you were advised of your current role, a dollar invested in GE becomes 52 cents. With the market, it becomes $1.40. In 1993, we had the Kidder Peabody debacle. The stock fell, but quickly corrected. We know what happened, who did it. GE took action and continued to grow. In 2009, GE paid $250 million in legal fees and fines as GE counted sales for years in which the sales did not really occur. The SEC found three such events. This time it's different, though. After Kidder Peabody, we found one person, Joseph Jett, entered erroneous income data to earn a $9 million bonus. In the more recent scam, for example, locomotives were idling as they would be delivered during the first of the year, but GE wanted to count its sales for the prior year, so creative accounting was used to sell locomotives to John Doe in the first year, who would in turn sell to GE customers in the next year. This took many people and many winks to pull off. This was one of three such events that the SEC caught. Clearly, anyone asking intelligent questions would need to be silenced to make this happen. The annual report has a copied signature from Jeff Elmont discussing the spirit and letter. It says employees cannot experience retaliations for raising concerns. But this is not true. Employees who have raised concerns have experienced adverse treatment by the company. November the 17th, 2010. An employee raised a concern where a management member, Matthew Johnson, appliance park parts purchasing boss, accounted for income for the year 2010 on parts that were not projected to be sold until the second half of the year 2011. Excuse me, my paper does not want to turn over. This was then presented to Mark Sherkness and Greta Veldkamp at Appliance Park. They responded that the concern was raised during a March meeting the following year and claimed that a separation decision was made in January 2011. The company simply takes questionable accounting concerns, makes a decision to eliminate the employee raising the concern, and states that the concern was raised after the separation decision. The concerns were used by the company to attempt to separate the employee from making a proxy recommendation to a company for which he is a stakeholder. Such separation efforts would not be possible if the employee never, ever raised a concern. The company again used the concern to separate numerous other shareholders from making proxy recommendations. The process of using concerns protected by the spirit and letter to obstruct shareholders from making recommendations to their company inherently posts the company selected portions of the concerns on the Internet without the permission of the employee raising the concern. GE senior counsel Bobby Simpson states that the spirit and letter is not a binding agreement between the company and the employee. If employees cannot rely on the spirit and letter that precedes Jeffrey Immelt's copy signature as honest, it should be removed entirely, as it is currently nothing more than a deceptive document that is used to screen employees who have the nerve to raise concerns for elimination. What we can learn from this is that the company can survive from an employee cooking the books where there is a culture for forthrightness and action. Persistent dishonesty sets us back for decades. Who knows if we ever catch up to the market from the succession decision date? See, one big lie hurts us less than ongoing lies not checked. Without immediate and effective correction, the company should be placed in more honest and competent hands, more likely to perform to the market. please vote for shareholder proposal number 6, sell the company. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that Martin Glatzer will be presenting proposal number 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a longtime attendee of shareholder meetings, I'm representing Mr. Steiner. Let the record indicate that I read the proposal as presented. Let the record indicate that the proposal and the reasons. As the proponent, I had the final say. I have 2 comments. I want to thank all you shareholders who took the time to vote on this proposal, especially the ones who voted yes. And the other comment is, we believe if we had access to the company's funds equal to the amount that the company used to vote to get votes against us, our percentage would be a lot higher. So as a proponent, if anybody wants to speak on my proposal, you're free to, and I have the final say. Thank you.
I think you get the final say.
The final say, let's vote on the proposal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So let's move on to agenda item number 4, balloting. Remember, we'll provide an opportunity for discussion on other business matters in a few minutes, but balloting on the items in the proxy statement come first. You'll find a ballot on your seat. If you have a ballot ready to turn in, please hold it up, and I'll ask the ushers to collect it. Ballots at this meeting will be reflected in the final vote results tomorrow. So let's move on. And agenda item number 5 is the inspector's report. I believe that the inspectors of election are ready to announce the outcome of the voting. So let's go to the inspector's report. Mr. Michael Barbera of IVS Associates will be presenting the report of the inspectors.
Mr. Chairman, the inspectors of election have completed an initial count of the votes cast at this meeting in person or by proxy. Proxies representing approximately 7,599,000,000 shares, or 75.8% of the total shares eligible to vote, were received. Other shares have been voted at this meeting by ballot or by proxy. On the basis of our initial count, the inspectors of election announced the following results. On the election of directors, each director received at least 4.7 billion favorable votes, and all nominees have been elected. On the advisory approval of our named executives' compensation, 93.8% of shares voted against 6.2%. The ratification of KPMG as independent auditor for 2014, 97.4% of shares voted against 2.6%. On the shareowner proposals, number 1, cumulative voting, 27.4% of shares voted against 72.6%. Senior executives hold option shares for life, 3.6% of shares voted against 96.4%. Multiple candidate elections, 3.6% of shares voted against 96.4%. Right to act by written consent, 21.9% of shares voted against 78.1%. Cessation of all stock options and bonuses, 4.1% of shares voted against 95.9%. Proposal to sell the company, 1.5% of shares voted against 98.5%. Mr. Chairman, this initial tally is subject to verification, and the final tabulation may reflect small changes in the votes I have announced. The final tabulation will be set forth in the formal report of the Inspectors of Election to the Secretary of the Company, which will be made after the count has been verified. This concludes our report.
Great. Now we're into agenda item number 6. The formal business of the annual meeting has been concluded, but we're ready to take some questions. And to be fair, we want to give other shareholders who haven't had a chance to speak a chance. So if you wish to speak, come to the microphones. Let's go to microphone number 1.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
How are you?
Okay. My name is Bill Freda, and I would like to thank you and the Board of Directors of the General Electric Company for adopting the shareowner proposal to eliminate what are commonly known as phantom dividends. You, Mr. Chairman, helped make this possible when, beginning in 2006, you refused to accept dividends on shares of your GE stock that had not vested. We all commend you for your leadership on this matter. About a year after GE purchased RCA and with it NBC, there was a knock on the door of my videotape editing room door at NBC News. When I opened the door, there stood an NBC producer and Jack Welch. Jack and I shook hands, and Chairman Welch said, "Welcome to the GE family." I had always felt that NBC was part of my extended family, and now the CEO of GE was telling me I was joining an even larger one. However, despite this long-ago family welcome, GE seems to have lost interest in their extended family. GE has decided to terminate its post-65 retirement benefits as of January 1, 2015, for all employees and retirees and their spouses who will not be 65 years old, enrolled in Medicare, and enrolled in these plans as of this date. This dramatic change doesn't affect just new employees. It affects long-term employees, retirees, and their spouses who devoted their lives to GE and on whose shoulders you, Mr. Chairman, stand. Jeff, GE made a promise to these family members, and now GE should fulfill that promise. It should not renege on a valued promise simply because other corporations may be reneging on theirs. I can only imagine your disappointment if a child and grandchild announced to you that they were breaking a promise to another family member, claiming it was a financial decision, and I can. I can only imagine that you, Mr. Chairman, and members of our board of directors would find this decision disappointing. Yet here we are just 8 months removed from the General Electric Company doing just that. Mr. Chairman, in your letters to shareowners, you have used the terms created trust and loyalty for GE, mutual trust, and GE is the we company, not the me company. Are these just punchlines? I ask this because this action GE is about to take on January 1st does not reflect that philosophy. My concern from a business perspective is that when employees, retirees, vendors, and customers are made aware that GE has reneged on a long-standing promise to GE family members, our corporate credibility will be forevermore damaged. Next, I want to appeal to the ladies and gentlemen of our board of directors. I challenge each of you to have the courage to reverse this change in GE policy, which will have a devastating effect on the quality of life of so many thousands of our GE family members. This decision does not belong to GE senior executives alone. It belongs to you. Whether or not GE has the legal right to eliminate post-65 retirement benefits for family members who have earned them during their long working lives at GE is something that may still have to be determined. But in any event, where GE families are concerned, it is not just about being right. It is about doing right. And finally, as I stand here on my 74th birthday, I cannot think of a more welcome gift than GE reversing this policy that shows such indifference to the welfare of GE family members. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Microphone number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Blackford.
Right.
One more time.
I hope so. In my hand, I got the book, The Great Price Conspiracy on General Electric's Wrongdoings. And it was interesting in the quote of Chairman Cardiner at the time said, "This too shall pass." And a lot of people forget it. But I've got to believe that hopefully we never have at GE the experience of price fixing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Microphone number one. Hey, Ms. Donoff, how are you?
Good. How are you? I'm Justin Danhoff. I represent the National Center for Public Policy Research. We're a free market think tank and a company shareholder. I have two very quick questions. The company's healthcare division saw revenue and profits drop that were blamed in the first quarter earnings call on the Affordable Care Act. Do you think the negative impact on the company stems from the way the Affordable Care Act is structured, or were prospective customers simply spooked by the disastrous Obamacare rollout? And if it's a structural problem, what changes, if any, in the law could help? And my second question really quickly is, the CEO of Mozilla was recently forced out of his job because he contributed cash to a political effort defining marriage. The idea that a qualified executive could be fired for participating in a civic decision-making was a shock to many folks. Some companies guarantee employees that their jobs will not be affected by outside legal personal political activities. We were unable to find such a guarantee in GE's spirit and letter, the code of conduct of the company, which states that employment decisions are based on, quote, job qualifications and merit, which is good, but the code of conduct also adds ambiguity by saying merit includes an employee's values. Unfortunately, in light of the Mozilla situation, the word values could now be interpreted in a way that may never have been intended by the company. So does GE guarantee the right of its employees to, on their own time, participate legally in the political process without their jobs being affected? And if not, would you consider adding such a guarantee into the spirit and letter?
So the question with first question is, I think there's still a lot of uncertainty in healthcare, and we'll just have to see that over time. To the second question, I'm really not familiar with that situation, so I really don't want to comment at all on that.
Okay.
Thanks. Microphone number two. Yes, ma'am.
Buenos dias, Mr. Chairman, Board of Directors, fellow shareholders. My name is Jane Garcia, and I come from the great city of Detroit, where you held your last meeting last year. It's a lot less. It's more calmer this year, and a special thank you to Roger Penske, who I thought was just did an outstanding job. I'm here representing national organizations such as SARE National, and we've been a partner in the past, and I will continue to look at partnerships as we expand and give you our thanks for the expansion of what you do in the communities, not just locally where you have your GE plants, such as a place like Detroit that needs jobs very badly, and it will come back. It is coming back slowly, but also throughout the country, throughout the global country. I think that everything we do for humanities and giving back to the communities is so important, and diversity has come. And I just want you to know that we will continue to support. I come in, I try to follow you as much as I can. Detroit was a little rougher to get in last year. Today was real easy. I spent the night here, so it was a lot easier. But I wanted to make sure that you all knew that, because I know that each one of the board of directors do give back. Example was Roger Penske, who loves Detroit and gives a lot back to that city. I just wanted to make sure that we go on record. Again, I represent National SARE, and I'm Jane Garcia from Detroit. Muchísimas gracias.
Great, thank you. Yes, sir, microphone number one.
Good morning, Mr. Immelt. My name is Jim White, a shareholder. And I initially just had one question, but in light of some of the prior proposals and comments, I'd just like to make a few remarks. One, in the Windy City, we're going to get you some Benadryl because I think your allergies are flaring up a little bit, but that'll come later. I have not been in business 49 years like Mr. Glasser. I've only been in business 31 years, and I've had to my own business, the distinct pleasure to invest in and witness the performance of many other publicly held companies, and I want to acknowledge and recognize the business savvy and leadership and integrity of your board of directors. I happen to have known and followed three of them through their careers, and I can say personally that you have fine additions and directors in those three individuals that I've worked with. To the comment of compensation, I think it's important that issues on compensation be weighed in light of the fact of what is salary and what is incentive or bonus incentives to be measured properly. We, as a contracting company, my firm installs not only your industrial turbines but your medical equipment and devices. We rate them against Siemens. In fact, I'm noticing here my microphone stand is made in Germany. To that extent, I can say very gladly that I'm delighted with GE's manufacturing and what it does to lead our country in manufacturing. We install components and parts in 16 states and 3 provinces, so we appreciate the industrial leadership that GE has led with. I would say on the issue of The old Bessie comments that were made on Bethlehem Steel, I think it's important to bear in mind on pension plans and debt and all those aspects of debt that what did in most of old Bessie was legacy pension costs, and I think that's an important metric to be understood. In addition to that, we talk about debt, and we talk about whether it makes sense to buy back our own stock with debt. Well, certainly it makes sense. It makes sense in light of the fact if it's undervalued, it's a good return on our investment. So my question, finally, appreciating your indulgence, is if I could just trouble Dan Heinzelman to identify himself. I just wanted to have a quick word with Mr. Heinzelman after the meeting.
Great. Well, he'll seek you out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Microphone number two. Yes, sir.
Bernard Biederman here, Riverwoods, Illinois, share owner. And your presentation, I saw those big numbers on backlog, and that scares me. We don't ever want to give our competitors a reason to steal market share. I guess where I'm going with that is the people in Peoria, Illinois, and Hartford, Connecticut would love to be right on our heels. Anyway, I'd like to have you challenge all of the divisions to start reducing the lead times, and especially any past dues where missed market commitments and things like that, so you can gain your market share. Steal it from the other guys.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff. My name is Kevin Maher. I'm from Lynn, Massachusetts, a share owner. Lynn is the birthplace of the General Electric Company. When Thomson Edison, Thomson Electric and Thomson Houston merged on April 15, 1892. And this is my 20th consecutive year as the annual meeting. So it feels pretty good to be able to say that. And I feel the presence of Helen Quirini here, and I feel her spirit. I will be short, but maybe not sweet, but to the point. First of all, your decision to eliminate post-65 health and life insurance was like the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor for benefits promised, and thousands made their plans in life based on what they were promised. Many would never have retired if they knew the rug was being pulled out from under them by taking away benefits based on their age. You have many options to fix this problem before January 2015. Does everyone remember the movie Invictus? Do you remember that movie? It was a real great movie. And Nelson Mandela came into a meeting in which the vote had already been taken to change the name of the Springboks, and he said, and went and addressed that meeting and said, "You did not consider all the facts." Guess what? He changed that all around. GE needs to do the same thing with this decision. Second, I want to thank you for doing what you told us at the meeting with the retirees in Fairfield by raising the dividend. That was really great, and keep it up. We passed out a leaflet. It's over here at the proponent table showing the disgraceful pension of John Nelville with nearly 44 years of service with the highest rate of pay in the shop and our 27th patent maker. For his 44 years, on top he gets a pension, monthly pension of $1,093.35. After insurance, this boils down to $789 a month. I think, and we think, this has to be changed. And you can do it, and we can do it together. And that's right on a letterhead, and you can see it on the proponent's table. But last and not least, Jeff, for years we have had a meeting with senior management and retirees to resolve many problems that have proved beneficial to both GE and retirees, and you and yourself have attended this kind of meeting in Fairfield. We will promise the annual meetings, and I understand your human relations department has a big shakeup with John Lynch and Mike DeSantis retiring. Jeff, we the retirees, who Jack Welch said are the largest block of share owners, need to meet with you and your team and the Vice President of Human Resources, Susan Peters. Jeff, I know you have my number, and you know I have yours, had number for a long time. So please set up the meeting and get going.
Great. Microphone number two. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Chairman, directors, and shareholders. My name is Terry Dybel. I'm a shareholder. My question is very brief. It's related to a consortium between GE, Hitachi, and Camco. And through this consortium, we are working on a process to enrich uranium using a laser. Could you give us a heads up on what's going on in North Carolina at the Wilmington facility and at the Paducah facility in Kentucky? And there's an agreement between the Australian and U.S. government to keep this process because it's third generation. Nobody else can do it. GE has it. Does GE and the consortium have a patent protecting it, an international patent?
Yeah, so I think we're still going through the pilot plant process with this technology to try to prove it out, and the technology is patented as well.
Okay, we have that.
Great.
Patent.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Microphone number one, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Ron Flowers with the Retirees Association of General Electric and out of Erie, Pennsylvania. Just want to talk a little bit about the forgotten folk. We have a whole bunch of retirees that built this company and built it on a really strong foundation. And many times during this presentation of the millions and billions of dollars that have transpired in the company, we heard about the crisis. The crisis where, you know, our stock went down to a little over $6, and, you know, it hurt a lot of people. I mean, there were millionaires that lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Really terrible. Now, what if you're a retiree? What if you're a retiree and you depend on the dividends that you get from the General Electric Company? This is your savings that they told you to put together. This is your savings that you put together, and then all of a sudden the company says, we're going to take two-thirds of it away. And they did. The stock went from 31 cents down to 10 cents. This hurt tremendously for the retirees. The company now says, we've pulled out of it, we're doing good, and the future looks great. Well, the retirees haven't pulled out of it. They lost that money. They had to make up that money by doing things like selling their stock. Well, when the stock goes back up, what does that mean to them? Just what does it mean to them? Nothing. So, I want to give you an example of some retirees. Will all the retirees in here please stand up? Come on, there's a whole bunch of you. There's the foundation of your company. You are here because of them. You are here because of them. Now, I implore you, Jeff, and your board of directors, we haven't had a structural increase in our pensions since 2007. We had a 13th check that benefited the people that get the highest pensions, but these people need a structural increase in their pensions focused on the people on the lower scale. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Microphone number two. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Lois Lubin, a share owner. In the mail, I received, you know, the letter with two sheets. One of them is the share owner meeting notice, two sides. The other one has one side. The top half is a letter to the share owners from Brackett B. Dennison III, who I see is right here. And the last paragraph says, the notice provides details about the online posting of our proxy materials, which is true. The notice contains information about how you can, if you wish, request paper or email copies at no cost to you. Yes. The last sentence says, it also has instructions for voting online, by mail, or in person. I have looked over this notice umpteen times without finding any instructions in this notice of how to vote in person. The second half of this second sheet includes the sentence, you may also vote your shares in person by bringing the notice with you and attending the meeting. Okay. But then it goes on, please see the proxy statement for additional information on how to attend the meeting and vote your shares. So now I'm told I have to see the proxy statement in order to find out how to attend the meeting. I looked at the last night was when I finally decided, okay, maybe I should look at that because I've checked this one 75 times trying to see the directions. I know where it is. It's in Chicago. I live in Chicago. Great. I can go to a shareholder meeting. And that one tells me something about a ticket, and, you know, if you vote your shares this way and you can get a ticket, but I said, I don't want to. I wanted to vote it in person. I found a place where it says, look online at this. And you click that one, I get a string of press releases. Sure. I go, okay, I say, and that's a phone number, so another one by phone. So I called that number, which is ComputerShare, where I was told, oh, you need an admission ticket in order to attend. And he was trying to find out for me. We were on the line for like 15 minutes and on hold. He finally came back and said, thank you so much for waiting, and it went dead. So I finally gambled that maybe there was some way to get in. But I think you could improve your communication.
Okay. Thank you. Microphone number one.
Hello, General Electric stockholders. My name is Don Gilson from Hubbard, Ohio. I've done about 114 different jobs to make a living and make a dollar. I drove truck for Roadway Express for 32 years. I was in probably 30,000 businesses in 30 years, and I was always asking questions, so I got a lot of experiences about a lot of businesses. I'm a positive thinker and I'm a cheerleader. And I've been a long-term stockholder of General Electric since November 2001. And as you see from one of my proposals, I lost a couple dollars. No big deal. I'm a positive thinker. Today is the day to turn this company around. I am, with your help, we're going to do it. And all I want to do in the next 2 years is double the sales, double the profits, and double the price of this stock and increase our factory workers' paycheck by 50 or 60% by having so darn many orders. I want, like BIC and all those pen companies have a shortage because our salesmen are using up all the pens. And so anyway, every morning when you look in the mirror to that beautiful face, I want you to say three times, think General Electric, think General Electric.
There you go.
Because I'm going to be in the mirror behind you.
Good, yes.
And you want
it.
Me out of the mirror. So anyway, so you remember that. And you take a piece of paper, and I want you to put it in your wallet in billfolds. And here's the I'm in the horse and buggy age, but I want you to have this piece of paper that has www.ge.com. And if you... Wherever you work, if you work in the hospital, you work on the railroad, if they're building a casino, whatever they're doing in your area, I want you to notify headquarters and see if we do that. And I'll tell you why it works. When I worked at Roadway, the boss would get a notice to lay two of us off. So there's 20 drivers. And, you know, those mean Teamsters? Anyway, my shop steward would say, we're not going to let them lay off anybody. Everyone asked for one more shipment. Here you got 20 drivers, and they make 20 stops a day. So you got 300 sales calls made that day. So anyway, when I'd be listening to my two-way radio on my route, I'd hear at the end of the day the dispatcher saying, well, hey, how about making a pick over there at Brown's place? And the driver would say, well, I don't have any room. He'd say, what do you mean you don't have any room? You only made two pickups. He said, well, I'm full. I can't get another shipment on because so-and-so give me six shipments and whatever. I'd hear that four or five times on the radio. So what we aren't doing is making enough sales calls. I've sold door-to-door. I've traveled the world. I used to have patch pants when I was a little boy. I grew up in a house that there was eight rooms and a path, not a bath. I've got shot at in Korea for this country. And by God, today's the day to turn this around.
Thank you.
And... so anyway,
good.
I hope you will do that. Look
good.
In the mirror any place. Give our company
good.
The chance to sell more.
Thank you very much. Let's go microphone number two.
Hi, Mr. Amell.
How are you?
Thank
good
you.
To see you.
Good. My name is Evelyn Kaufman, and I live in Schenectady, New York, like thousands of other retired GE salaried employees. And although I live on Regent Street, I'm not feeling particularly royal today, as I, along with tens of thousands of other salaried non-union employees and retirees have been told we no longer are eligible for the post-65 benefits, which you've heard from other people today. These were benefits that we earned over our career and that we were promised when we retired. Right now, I'm sure many of us would like to be in a union like the IUE-CWA, headed by Bob Sanamore, former business agent of Schenectady Local 301, whom you recently lauded in an annual report as a respected friend of yours. I am sure you talked to Bob but you don't talk to the tens of thousands of us who, being non-union, effectively become non-existent. In 2010, I made the decision to retire from GE, and I made that based on many factors, not the least of which was that I would have medical coverage for the rest of my life. It's very hard to plan for one's future when the promises made by your company are taken back after the fact. In September 2012, GE announced that we were losing our supplemental medical coverage and that I would be given 2 whole years to help make up that loss. The cost to me to replace this benefit will be in excess of $50,000, and I have yet to figure out how I'm going to make up that loss. Ironically, I spent the majority of my 37 years with GE traveling the company as a GE benefits counselor at corporate benefits delivery. And during that time, I went to many GE locations, and I presented to employees who were impacted by massive job loss events such as layoffs, plant closings, and business dispositions. And although that was a devastating time for them, I was so proud that I could promise those employees, many of them, that they would be able to keep those benefits because they had met the qualifications that the company had established. I also gave thousands of presentations to employees and their spouses who attended our pre-retirement planning seminars. And again, I let them know exactly what was required in order to keep those valuable benefits. I'd like to emphasize that never during any of those presentations was I ever told to mention that GE had the right to withdraw those benefits at any time, and apparently for any reason. Now, any clear-thinking person realizes that companies can't continue to offer that level of benefit coverage. And even GE has changed over the years the benefit offerings that it has given its employees, but for new employees. GE has always abided by the principle that once a benefit is earned, it can't be lost. Apparently, that's no longer the case. It is even worse when I think of all the people who relied on me to give them their benefits education. I feel the company has jeopardized its integrity, but more importantly to me, it's jeopardized my credibility. So I have only one question, and that is I would like somebody from corporate human resources in Fairfield to come visit those of us in Schenectady who'd like to have that conversation with you and understand why you made that decision and to help answer some of the questions that we have. Thank you.
Microphone number one. Yes, sir.
Mr. Elmo, Edward Cooper, individual shareholder. First of all, thank you for coming to Chicago. There's one brief comment and then a question. I know GE had a tough time during the financial crisis, and I defied my financial advisor's advice to sell the stock at the time. I was interested in your comment about 30,000 people being screened for cardiac problems and so on, and GE has always been a leader in technology. Are you involved, or do you have anything to do with 3D printing, which seems to be a growing field right now?
Yeah, we know we have a tremendous investment in that, and we think that's going to be a good future technology in manufacturing. Thank you. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff. I'm Dennis Rochlow from Waupaca, Wisconsin. As important as the issue of corporate governance is, my remarks today address a more pressing matter, the product of an ill-considered action by the board. Before going into details, I express my appreciation to General Counsel Denniston and Director Lazarus, who are considerate enough to listen to my views. Although the degree of engagement they provided was less than the matter deserves, and their official position remains disappointing, each is the type of individual this company needs, and we are privileged that they are in their important positions. Considering GE's claims that it values highly feedback and transparency, the inability to establish any meaningful dialogue with appropriate company executives on the proposed dramatic cuts to retirees' health care benefits is deeply disappointing. As mentioned in my comments at last year's shareholder meeting in New Orleans, those unprecedented and, in my mind, unjustifiable changes represent a cost shift of nearly $1 billion. Admittedly, that is a considerable savings to the company, but it is directly attributable to huge, unexpected increases in the expenses incurred by retirees. About $2,000 per year for long service employees like myself, and up to $100,000 for some married couples over their expected years of retirement. In effect, one party's enhanced competitiveness is funded by significant reduction in the other party's well-being, a classic win-lose structure which I tried to avoid whenever possible in my 36 years of representing GE in negotiations with its major unions. What I also tried to do in that career was to deal honestly with the facts, to listen carefully to the views of the other side, and to fashion a resolution of any differences in a manner that would pass public scrutiny and build a foundation for an ongoing relationship of mutual success. In the instant case, such objectives have seemingly been thrown out the window. In response to 2 years of decreasing retiree health care costs, our CryWolf company ravaged benefits just weeks after expressing in writing that it expected and intended to continue those very benefits indefinitely. Where I come from, a month is not the commonly understood definition of indefinite. Without a pressing financial imperative, the company's action strikes me as unseemly and a gross departure from its tradition of fair dealing with employees. And by the way, healthcare costs declined again last year. Compounding the inequity, the company refuses to support or defend its actions other than to mount some platitudinous dedication to competitiveness. There may be a new day coming in healthcare once Obamacare gets up and running, but I doubt it will be as sunny as some of its actuarially challenged advocates predict. Be that as it may, an open exchange of ideas and data with the population adversely affected would seem totally consistent with the professed values of a company that A, is committed to both the spirit and the letter of ethical behavior, B, trumpets the power of diverse teams, and C, openly worries about the well-being of some theoretical teenager working for some foreign vendor and provides her multiple avenues to redress possible wrongs. To quote from the company's seminal document, we seek to go beyond simply obeying the law. We embrace the spirit of integrity. Really? Apparently, it is easy to love humanity in the abstract, but it is impossible to look a group of informed, intelligent, long-service salaried employees in the eye and tell them why the employment bargain they thought they struck is so yesterday. Even more confounding, GE has regularly met with retired unionized hourly and salaried employees to discuss their benefit concerns. Where's the equity in that? Never would I have thought a dose of Plessy v. Ferguson justice would look appealing. For 36 years, I thought that I did my union relations job competently. And apparently GE did too. It promoted me to my dream job of chief negotiator and paid me pretty well in the process. Good as I was, there is no way I could have ever negotiated with the IUE, CWA, the UE, the IAM, the IBEW, the UAW, and the like, a reservation of rights clause that gave the company the unfettered ability to toss out and destroy the very benefits I had promised to confer on their members in order to reach an agreement and get the proverbial handshake. I value my credibility too much to engage in such chicanery. And even if some other management magician were previously able to pull off that transaction, common decency and good faith bargaining would make it incumbent on me to reiterate periodically that now you see it, now you don't, to call to the attention of the new leadership the fragility of the company's offer. I know I never did that. Throughout my career, I practiced a number of principles that contributed to the company's and my success. First, you are accountable not only for what you say, but for what the other party thought you said. That is what they believed they had bargained. This has the salutary effect of encouraging precision and candor and cutting down on vague, ambiguous assertions like competitiveness. Second, you should seek and take only that which you truly need, not that which you could get due to your adversary's limitations. Morality and integrity must outweigh legality and ability if you are going to make a long-term mutually beneficial relationship. Third, if a mistake is made, even one of inadvertent overreaching, admit it and correct it as promptly as practicable, or the foundation of trustworthiness critical to your reputation will be irreparably compromised. The company violated all these rules with the announced health care cuts. I don't blame you personally, Jeff, but I condemn those who, knowing your aversion to legacy costs, sought to curry favor and ignored history and context in the process. Shame on them. It appears that for too many GE executives, Bertolt Brecht's observation, grub first, then ethics, has replaced finding a better way every day as GE's operating mantra. No longer does GE bring good things to life. Rather, it takes good things from long service, credulous employees, and cautious executives who contemporize benefits, that is, dramatically reduce them, and who do so without the decency or courage to face those disenfranchised. Abraham Lincoln observed that mercy bears richer fruits than strict justice. Embracing that ethic, the spirit trumping the letter, why doesn't GE, in the claimed spirit of transparency, integrity, and facing reality, sit down with salaried retirees who cannot unionize to, one, review the healthcare cost data, two, compare the actions of peer companies like Boeing, IBM, and Johnson & Johnson, and three, detail the financial impact of these proposed changes on the various classes of salaried employees, retirees. In being one of the first companies to do so, not the 200th, GE would restore my belief in its fundamental decency and integrity. It would likewise reaffirm its oft-stated claim that its employees are indeed its most valuable asset. What's your response to that suggestion?
It's great to see you again this year, Dennis.
And it's good to see you.
So thanks for your thoughtful words. So we're going to take two more, microphone one and maybe one and microphone two, then we'll call it a day. Let me just take one here and then. Okay, we'll give that to you. You're microphone one. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Mike Dunn from Evanston, just north of here. Welcome to the greatest city in the country.
Thanks.
And it'd be a good idea to move the corporate headquarters to Chicago.
Good.
You won't regret it. It's a great town. I have a simple yes or no question concerning the company's charitable giving area. The charitable giving of the company. And the question is, does GE give any money to Planned Parenthood, yes or no?
Do you know the answer to that? I don't think so. I think the answer is no to that. Microphone two. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Anne-Marie Brown. I'm from Chicago. A lot of the things that you build and do are connected with areas of the environment, energy, medical, et cetera. Could you please tell me what your policy is in regards to the environment and the products that you are producing that might have an impact on the environment?
Well, we constantly introduce new fuel-efficient products that all have a positive impact, broadly speaking. We have, for years, invested behind energy efficiency and reducing emissions of all of our products. So we view that as a competitive advantage. But we really follow markets, and we're led by technology.
Okay. What about the fracking and things like that, where there are questions about the impact?
So we believe we provide solutions to those challenges around hydraulic fracking and other areas. But we very much believe that natural gas is a great asset for this country.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the last word right here.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for chairing the shareholders' meeting. It's a pleasure to be at a GE meeting. You allowed every shareholder to take the time to ask the question. And at many shareholder meetings, they cut shareholders off. So it's a pleasure to be here. I almost always hope I have time next year maybe to come to another GE.
Great.
Thanks
great
again
to see another
for coming
guy. Before we leave here today, I want to thank the city of Chicago and thank all of the retirees and investors who came here today. These are a great process to let people have their say, and I know you all care about the company. Subjects like healthcare are difficult subjects that we take seriously. All of us have personally spent a long time with the company, and I consider Dennis Rochelow, who thoughtfully spoke the words today, somebody that I've known for a long time. I respected his work. I respect his words today. These are decisions that the company takes very seriously when we do, and we appreciate your voice. We appreciate you coming here today. This is a great company, a competitive company, a high-integrity company, and I want everybody to know that as you leave here today. GE is a fine company that is in strong shape. We're not a perfect company, but we've made it for 130 years because we have a great team that works for with integrity, that beats its competition in every corner of the world. And I want you to walk out of this room here today with your head held high as a G investor. Thank you for coming here today. It's great to have you.